who has never seen Singapore yet. But he's going to be a good one in the seminar. Our topic for today is fasting and certain diets. And I would like to add to your store of knowledge that I hope can be very helpful to you. As you are aware, today we hear all kinds of voices. We hear voices saying this, and we hear voices saying that. And even the experts do not know what is correct. And so those of us who make health matters a lifetime study, we do our best to try to tell what is truth. Then when we determine what is truth, we try to teach it in that way. As best we can, we will tell you what is truth and factual.
Thank you, Leo.
But as you know, if you have known any health lecturer for a very long time, you have known that they will change their minds. And what we taught at one age, we don't teach in another age. And we can even talk about the era of fasting, the era of certain types of fasts, which we no longer do, perhaps. And it is that way with almost every kind of treatment that we know. Now, is this just in natural medicine, or is it in everything? Well, it isn't just in natural medicine. You may know that the average drug has a 5-year lifespan, and then it passes away, but another one is right there to take its place. And we have that new one that was introduced. It has a 5-year lifetime. When it will be declared ineffectual and too toxic to continue to use. And so we stop using it. But another one is there to take its place. And we continue with this round, as you know. Now, with the matter of fasting and diets, do we have a pointer? With fasting, I am certain that I can tell you that a day or two of fasting per week will be beneficial to you. I have no fear whatsoever that that will ever change. That, I know, is factual and unchangeable. A day or two of fasting per week. And I would like to say also that in many instances, that practice will do you more good than almost any amount of medical advice or treatment that you could get. So let us do what we can to study this matter of fasting. Let's just term this a food vacation. How long should a food vacation last? I've already said we could go a day or two and no fear of having any problem. But is there a problem if we go longer than that? And I really think there is not. There is probably no problem in a short vacation. And if you are having any kind of disease, such as this list right here, you may find that a short vacation can help you. Now, let us take these first two, colds and flu. If you have a cold or the flu and you engage in a fast, you may go through what is called a cleansing. The cleansing will be expressed as toxins appearing in the nasal mucous membranes, in the intestinal tract, or elsewhere. And so you may actually feel a little worse with a fast. And so I bring this up because it is often done and some people do well with it. But if you're not the kind of person who does well with a fast when you have a cold or the flu, then don't do it. All right, now let's take these others. With asthma, will you do better or worse with a fast if you have asthma? Most of the time you will do better. Most of the time you will do better with asthma. With skin problems, many of them, you will do much better with a fast than with eating food. Let us take such common ones as eczema and psoriasis. Both of those, you will do better with fasting. But now how long can you fast if you have eczema? Your eczema may have been going on for a long time. And your body may need 2 or 3 weeks of fasting in order to clear out all of the metabolic problems that have caused your rash. And so can you last that long? Well, you probably can. You can probably go 10 or 15 days without any problem. Now, all of these others, arthritis, will often be cured with a fast. And I did say that correctly, cured. You will not have pain and you will not have inflammation if you fast long enough. Again, the problem is, can you outlast the arthritis? Then, indigestion. Many people will have their constipation to be totally relieved by fasting. Of course, high blood sugar will come right down to normal after a few days. And high blood pressure invariably will come down with fasting. Now, let us say you don't want to do an entire food fast. With such things as high blood pressure and high blood sugar, even reducing the amount of food that you take may make it so that your blood pressure goes right down or your blood sugar goes right down. Now, just for the sake of completeness, let me say that there are some people who can fast and their blood pressure will go up and their blood sugar will go up. So, an occasional person will have the next day their blood sugar is up higher than it was when they were eating, or their blood pressure is higher than it was when they were eating. So what should they do? Quickly go back to eating? No, just continue the fast, because eventually these will correct themselves and you will eventually get benefit from it. Okay? All right. A one-day food vacation can do all of these things with the liver, the kidneys, the colon, your eyes, your breath, calm your spirits, sharpen your senses, remove blood impurities like toxins, increase your energy, raise food appreciation, and develop a keener appetite. A lot of people tell me, I'm never hungry. I'm never hungry. And so if you have that problem that you're never hungry, try a fast. It's pretty certain that if you fast long enough, you will eventually get hungry. Now, let me say a word about that. Are you going to immediately feel hungry if you, say, fast for 5 days? Will you feel hungry? Has anybody ever fasted for 5 days here? Yes, some of you. I have too. What happens at about day 3 when you're fasting? Does anybody know? You totally lose your appetite. You have no interest in food at all. Those foods that you have had a real problem with, you could have a table full of it and you would not eat. You know that you could go forever and not eat, or you believe that you could go forever and not eat again, because your appetite is totally gone. You see food, it looks good, you know that it's been prepared well, but you don't have to eat it. If you eat it, it's because you make a decision to eat, not because you have to have it like you used to do. And so people who have a runaway appetite, it's just runaway. For these individuals, a prolonged fast, more than 3 days, will help them to get this matter in perspective of how the mind should think about food. Okay. Now here is another kind of fast, the two-meal fast, where you eat two meals 6 hours apart, and then you have an 18-hour a day fast. Okay, you understand that how that goes. You eat two meals, then you have 18 hours a day of fast. There are many Americans who never go more than 8 hours without eating. But it's good for us to have an 18-hour a day fast. Human beings are the type of animal doing better on two meals a day. Now, you are aware that there are animals, those of you who have had animals, livestock, or pets, you know that they have a certain pattern that they like to eat. Anybody here ever had a pet snake? Anybody had a pet snake? If you have had, I've never had a pet snake either. I don't know whether I trust people who keep snakes. Might be something wrong with them. But if you've ever had a pet snake, you know that you feed the snake, what is it, about once a month, isn't it? Or once every 3 weeks? That's their pattern. That's how they eat. They don't need to eat more frequently than that. Now, if you have cattle, they're grazing all day. And they don't do well if they don't get to graze all day. If you have chickens, you feed them twice a day, but they may be pecking around all the time. So animals have different patterns of eating. Human beings have a pattern that's the best for them physiologically to eat two times a day. Just two times a day. Now, if you will take this pattern, eat two times a day, then you will have a total reduction in your calories a little bit. That's just natural. And yet, when you eat a meal, you probably can eat a little more without gaining weight. If you have a problem gaining weight with eating too much food, you will very likely be able to eat in these two meals enough that you feel totally comfortable. You know that you do not have to overeat in order to feel comfortable. You will feel totally comfortable, and still your total number of calories in the day will be less. Now, notice the things. Now, some of these have been found in animals that have been put on a meal-type pattern, and some of these have been found in human beings. Like this one, 93% fewer cancers. This one was discovered in animals. This has not been discovered in that 93% is not something that we can yet say about human beings. We can say this, however, that in at least 30% of cancers, overeating is known to be a factor. We also believe that it is probably, we could say and know that it is a fact, 50% fewer cancers in those who eat two meals a day and fast about 18 hours. Especially colon cancer, much, much less. Breast cancer, much less in individuals. Yes. Okay, the pattern that you should have is breakfast, about 6 hours later, 5 to 6 hours later, your second meal of the day, lunch. Then nothing else after that, until the next morning at breakfast. So it's breakfast and lunch, no supper. Now, let me present to you this thought, that most human beings eat two meals a day. They just eat the wrong two meals. They eat lunch, which is a light meal, and dinner. Dinner, a humongous meal. That's a wrong pattern. Because you work on breakfast, you work on lunch, you sleep on supper. And that's not good for the body. Okay. Fasting more than 5 days. Now, while I'm going to tell you cautionary things about fasting more than 5 days, I really like a 5 or 6 day fast for people, especially diabetics or people with hypertension or cancer or anyone more than 5 days, 5 to 10 days even. I like that kind of fast if they have plenty of nutrient reserves. Now let's take a thin little person. Are we going to put that person on a 10-day fast? Person is 5 feet 2 and weighs 88 pounds. Would you tell that person to have a 10-day fast? No, I wouldn't. I would think that they are already marginal nutritionally and I would not have them fast. But for people who are plumpish and have plenty of nutrient reserves, I would not hesitate at all to tell them have a 5 to 10 day fast. There are some things that you might expect in people who have more than a 5 day fast. One is nutrient deficiencies. Internal organs such as the liver, or the kidneys, or the brain might lose some of its substance. Muscles might waste. And so we want to be careful of internal organs, muscle mass. And it's always necessary when you're fasting to use plenty of water. That's something you must always remember. And then fasting as a quick weight loss measure is non-productive. You will not gain anything if it's you're doing this. I'm going to fast for 10 days and I'm going to lose X amount of weight, and then I will be able to fit into my clothes that I could not fit into before, and everything's going to be fine. That doesn't work that way for the most part. Unless you are using a fast as a weight loss measure to kick off a better eating commitment. You have already committed yourself to a better style of eating. You already have the plans laid. You already have the foods in place. You've already gotten rid of those things you should not eat. You've already done that. You're committed. Then you can fast. You've already made the commitment. You've already set in motion your new style of eating. Or if you have extreme obesity and need to lose poundage fast. And I'll tell you a story. We had a woman who came here from, I believe it was Pennsylvania, very overweight. She was a short person, but enormously overweight. She was going to eat in my home and work in my office because she didn't have the money to pay for being in a patient program. So that's what we did. She drove up to my house, got as close to the door as she could drive her car, got out of the car slowly, walked the few paces to the door, came inside, and my back door has a step that's about this high. It was a hard, great difficulty that she stepped up onto the first floor of my house and came into the living room and then leaned on a chair like this. She couldn't even sit down. And her lips were blue and her fingernails were blue. We put her on a fast and she lost weight right away because she was close to death because of her overweight. And she did very well. She had we started with a 3-day fast, then we let her eat a day or two, and then we did a 4-day fast and let her eat a day or two, and then a 5-day fast and let her eat a day or two. And then we went back to 2 days of fasting per week for her. And she rapidly gained in strength and in ability to breathe so that within about 5 months she was able to walk this entire circle here without turning blue. So for her, weight loss quickly was a life-saving measure. But generally, most people do not need to lose weight that fast. They can fast for a day or two, but a prolonged fast, like 5 or 6 days or so, they may not need to do that. Now, what about people who have diabetes? There are some people who have diabetes so severe that we will fast them for several days. But notice certain categories of people, you do not have them to fast. One is those who are pregnant or nursing a baby. They should not fast. That's for the most part. But I want to tell you a case history. We had a minister's wife who began to lose her milk. She was nursing her first baby, and her milk just began to dry up. And we were doing everything that we could for her. We gave her all the standard treatments for increasing milk production, and she did not respond. She still didn't have enough milk for the baby. Her husband came to me and said, "What would you think of fasting and prayer in my wife's case?" And I said, "Well, if you are impressed that this would be good, let's try it. I have never tried this to increase milk production. It just seems to me that it would work in the other way, but she's losing her milk anyway. We don't have much to lose." So we gave her a 2-day fast. And her husband fasted also and prayed for his wife. And her milk came back full force. Now, whether that's a good treatment for everybody, I don't know. Because our rule has always been we don't have pregnant or nursing women to fast. But under special circumstances, it might have an application. Okay, the next thing is, if you have type 1 diabetes or you are insulin dependent, do not fast. Now, why is that? The type 1 diabetic or the juvenile diabetic requires insulin in order to keep them from getting acidosis. And so if you fast a person who has type 1 diabetes or juvenile diabetes, if you give them a fast, they will begin to have acidosis. And it could get severe enough that they would have to be hospitalized for it. So it can be very serious in type 1 diabetics. Persons with gout should not be given a fast. They can have a reduction in their food, their total food, but with gout, the uric acid can build up in their blood with the fasting, and that can cause them to have serious problems and pain so severe that they wind up in the hospital as well. Then, if there is an eating disorder, bulimia or anorexia, I do not fast these individuals. Even the bulimic, I do not fast. Because the hope with the bulimic, the one who is pathologically overeating, is to retrain that person to eat normal-sized meals. With the person with anorexia, the pathologic unwillingness to eat, for these, again, it's a retraining process, and you gain nothing by giving them a fast. And persons with who are dependent on certain types of medications, like those for epilepsy, persons with kidney disease, some people with asthma, although it depends on their type of medication. With some people with asthma, you will find that they do wonderfully with a fast, especially if they start having an acute attack, an acute asthmatic attack. Persons with a terminal illness, again, they may or may not fast. Let's say a person with a terminal illness greatly desires to fast. I always say to them, you may fast if you would like, but it is their decision and not mine with the terminal illness. Sometimes a person with terminal cancer may feel, if I did a fast, I think I would feel better. Or I think I might slow down the progress of my cancer. And if a person feels that way, I say it is your choice. You make the decision, and I will try to help you to get through the problems that might come up with a fasting and a terminal illness. Late-stage tuberculosis, of course, should not be fasted because they are wasting away. Okay, what about juice fasting? I like juice fasting for short periods. And individuals who just say, I know I can't do a fast, they will often want to do a juice fast because it can be, they feel that they can be more comfortable with a juice fast or that they can continue to work with a juice fast, and that may be the case. It can be done for as long as a month without any big problem. 2 to 3 large glasses of juice to make you feel you've had a meal without stuffing. That's how much you should take in the way of fruit juice. You can use fruit juice in the morning, vegetable juices later in the day. Or you can take an all fruit juice fast, or you can take an all vegetable juice fast. It's their choice. Whatever your decision about the type of juice, it should be sipped slowly and mixed with saliva, same way that you eat a meal, because that has to be digested is in the juice. The fiber or fibrous portions do not require much in the way of digestion, and so you do not need to specially mix the fibrous part with saliva. Question?
What do you think about if somebody has gout and they wanted a glass of orange juice in the morning? Is that okay?
What about a person with gout who wants to take a juice fast? They may do that. A juice fast may be fine for a person with gout, but they have to be careful not to lose weight too fast. Now, for individuals who are susceptible to gallstones, they won't do well with a total food fast either, or even a severe reduction in total food. How do you know if you're susceptible to gallstones? It's if you have a relatively high cholesterol level in your blood. then you're susceptible to gallstones. And if you fast, you may get an acute production of gallstones and have to have a gallbladder operation. A friend of mine had a lot of excess weight. She decided that it was unhealthful and she wanted to go on a greatly restricted food fast. And besides that, she was supposed to sing in a wedding. So she decided, I'm going to just eat an apple and a slice of bread for each meal. That's all, no more. One slice of bread, one apple. So she did this for about 2 weeks. And one night, about 2 a.m, she started having pain up here in her right upper abdominal quadrant. And before 8 o'clock the next morning, we all knew that she was having an attack of acute cholecystitis. And before nightfall, she had her gallbladder operated on. So you have to be careful with persons who are susceptible to gallstones with quick weight loss programs. Yes? Why eat the fruit in the morning and the vegetables later? It's just your choice. No reason. Yes. People generally think of fruit as an early morning rather than a later in the day food. That's all. Okay. Now, why not the popular diets like the prudent diet or Weight Watchers diet? Well, these may be fine, but the Weight Watchers diet and the prudent diet both have vacations from the diet. And that is always wrong. A vacation must not be taken from a diet. It is a commitment for life. Now, let me just ask you this. If you have had a certain type of diet and you have gained weight on it, is that not a type of experiment that you have done, a scientific experiment? This kind of food with my kind of heredity leads to overweight. Do you see? So you've done a scientific experiment. You know that that kind of diet is going to make you overweight. Or let's say it's not just overweight, it's hypertension. Or it's diabetes. Or some other kind of disease. Whatever it is, you know that that kind of diet is going to lead to your disease. You don't need to try it again. And so it's a total commitment without deviation. And I tell my patients it is like getting married. There are no vacations from marriage. When you are married, it is constant. Not something that you take a vacation from. You don't say, well, today I'm going to go out and have lunch with my old boyfriend. You don't do that kind of thing. It's a commitment, you see. Same thing with diet. It is a commitment that is forever. Wrong switch. Okay. Now here is one. Fat people cannot eat free fats and maintain a normal weight and still be satisfied with the amount of food that they eat. They may do it, but they eat such a tiny little bit of food that they don't feel satisfied with that. And so for the most part, people should simply remove free fats from their diet. They don't have nutrients in them. They only have calories for the most part. You don't need those nutrients, the fat nutrients, you don't need those because you should be getting those from some other source, such as nuts and legumes. and peanuts and avocado and olives. Second thing, fattening foods given as a reward in these diets. That, of course, teaches one that it is highly desirable to eat those fattening foods. And I say it is not desirable to eat fattening foods because they are not only fattening, they are also unhealthful. Do you know of any fattening food that is not unhealthful? High in sugar, high in fat, or high in protein. And these are imbalanced foods. Foods that do not give you general support. Do you understand? General nutrient support. And so they are unhappy foods, unhealthful foods, and they should not be taken, because the great objective is not just to have a certain weight, it is to be healthy, and proper weight is what you want to do. Then it's better to remove tempting foods from the diet. Why is that true? It's because it's like giving a few cigarettes to a person who is addicted to cigarettes, or a little bit of drugs to a person who is on cocaine. It's just cut it out. Cut it out. Go cold turkey and just cut it out. And you'll do a lot better if you do that. Dietary vacations cause weight gain, and they cause a tax, a special burden on the liver. So they should... temporary vacations are burdensome to the body. Now, let me explain why that is. If your body has become accustomed to a certain type of unhealthful food, it's a strain on your body, but it strains and puts the equipment into motion that will deal with that unhealthful food. Then you quit using that food for a time. You're on your diet. So your body takes down that straining equipment that it's been straining to maintain, takes that down and puts the pieces back in the warehouse. So you no longer have that equipment. You're now in maintenance gear, and all of your liver and kidney and spleen and immune system functions are normal. They're not in this taxing, difficult, unhealthful mode. Okay, then you break your diet and you eat these unhealthful foods, and your body runs to the warehouse, gets out this equipment, and tries to reconstruct the equipment to deal with the unhealthful food. It's a strain, a double strain on the body. Not only have been done on people who have had, let's say they have high cholesterol. They're eating no eggs, no red meat, nothing that's high in cholesterol. So the liver says, I don't have to deal with all this heavy cholesterol anymore. And so it relaxes and settles down. But then you take a vacation from your diet. You take a dietary vacation. And you go out and you eat 6 eggs and a corned beef sandwich with lots of mayonnaise. Vacation. Your diet says that you should, about once a month, you should take a vacation. So you go out and you eat these unhealthful things, high in cholesterol, and the liver is not able to handle the extra cholesterol. So you go back in 3 months to your doctor. You've been eating this way just periodically. Your doctor takes another blood test, and your cholesterol is higher than it was. And you say, but doctor, I don't understand that. I've been so good, except that I have just had, just once a week, I've just had 4 eggs and a corned beef sandwich. with lots of mayonnaise. Just once a week. And all the rest of the time I've been so careful. Why is my cholesterol up? I might as well just throw in the towel and give up, because I'm never going to be of normal cholesterol. Do you see how that is? But it's that you have teased your body. You have deceived it. And it does not know what to do with you. And so it is counterproductive to be really strict and then lose it. Okay, the mono diets. I do not object to the mono diets. They do have some risks. You'll see these risks right here. Certain things like food toxicity, such as too much vitamin A or mineral overload or deficient nutrition, those are possible, but they're not very likely with a short-term fast like 1 month. And so the grapefruit diet, the grape cure, the carrot juice diet, those are all right for a short term. Just don't depend on them for a long term. Now let's go to the next one, the raw food diet. The rationale for raw foods is that you would get enzymes in raw foods. But actually, the enzymes are digested. The stomach and all of your intestinal tract just considers enzymes to be food. And so it just immediately breaks it down and uses the raw materials as nutrients in your body, do you see? And so you do not benefit from the enzymes that are naturally present in these foods. It is true that raw foods do have a lot of enzymes in them, but they do not benefit you that much. Raw foods, however, do stimulate your body to produce enzymes. And so the end result is that you do have more enzymes than you would have had if you had not eaten the raw foods. But so will cooked foods stimulate. Cooked fruits will also stimulate you to produce more enzymes. So the benefit of having them raw may not be as great as you would hope that it would be. So it is not the enzymes so much as it is that it is simply the lowered number of calories in your food. Yes.
So the Hallelujah diet that promotes the relatively raw food diet.
Mm-hmm. What about the Hallelujah diet? Have you heard of that one? Okay. The Hallelujah diet. It promotes raw foods, and I like it. I approve of raw foods for a month or two or three. But then you need to get back to eating some cooked foods. Yes?
On the Hallelujah diet, I recommend 85% raw foods.
Uh-huh.
One cooked food at one meal of the day.
Uh-huh.
So you do recommend
cooked grains. Uh-huh. Yes. I see nothing wrong with that. It's just all raw for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Why is the word sprouted with a question mark?
It's that it's not. You may use sprouted grains and sprouted legumes. You may use those, but they need some steaming, so they are not entirely raw. So I like to see both grains and legumes steamed a little while, maybe 20 minutes. The grains wouldn't require the 2.5 to 4 hours that they usually require after they've been sprouted. Yeah, just eating them sprouted and no steaming may be difficult on the digestion. May be difficult for us to completely break all of the starches down. So So it's better to have some steening, even though they're sprouted. Let me tell you a story that we had here at Uchi Pines about a woman who had been on an all-raw diet for about 11 years. She was considered somewhat eccentric in her home, in her family. She lived alone and produced her own raw diet and her own menus, and so nobody objected very much. But she began to act very strangely. She'd always just been a little eccentric, but now she was definitely strange. And she would say things that sounded insane, as if she were getting an insanity. And furthermore, she began to have some gastrointestinal problems, especially diarrhea and some discomfort in her abdomen. And she had some weird ideas about why she had trouble with her abdomen, some spirits from outer space bothering her. And she also got this rash on her arms and hands and on her legs and feet. And when she came here, my husband made the diagnosis of pellagra. Pellagra is a deficiency of niacin. So we gave her niacin. It did not help her. First thing we did was to give her cooked foods. That did not help her. I thought that we'll just give her cooked foods and she'll take up the niacin and she'll be all right. But it did not help her. She was just as weird as before. Rash was just as bad as before. Diarrhea as bad as before. So then we began to give her pills with niacin or vitamin B3. She didn't respond to the pills. She was just as sick as she had been before. Maybe even a little bit more weird than she had been. Rash was just as bad. Diarrhea maybe even a little worse. Pain a little worse. So one of the lifestyle counselors, Mrs. Jean Glenn, said, "Don't you think we should give her some IV B vitamin?" I said, "Yes, maybe we should." By that time, we'd been into it for 2 weeks. 1 week of the cooked foods, 1 week of the vitamins by mouth, and so we started giving her IV vitamins. She did not respond to that either. And so I talked with my husband about the problem, and he evaluated her situation and said that she had become resistant to vitamin B3. So now she could not use vitamin B3 in her metabolic systems. So by that time she was getting so insane that I had to call the family and say, "We're not able to handle your aunt here. You're going to have to take her back home." So they came to get her. They took her to the mental institution here, and there at the mental institution they started giving her an IV drip with niacin. But she never responded, and 6 months later she died of her pellagra. Now this is a case of resistance to a nutrient on which we are dependent. And it occurred in the program of a woman who was on a long-term fast, a long-term raw fruit diet. So I tell you this story to emphasize the fact that you may use a raw food diet, but don't plan to do it for the rest of your life. Just plan to do it. I feel pretty safe in telling you you can use it for a year or two. But beyond that, I don't know. But the Southern Medical Association published in the Southern Medical Association Journal, a very fine study done on several hundred people with high blood pressure who were on an all-raw diet for 6 months. They did wonderfully well. Blood pressure came right down to normal in every case, and they also had no difficulties at all with the diet. No, they were not, had no problem. Then another study was done where the individuals were kept on a raw diet for a year, and they had no problem. But the Hallelujah diet has 85% raw and 15% cooked, and that may be all right. Grains always need good, well cooking. You know, they need to be cooked well. And dried legumes need long cooking. Yes?
It's good to hear your word maybe, because I have heard other MDs saying that raw food is not the best thing for us.
Yes. We do all right on raw foods for quite a while. And there are published reports in the medical literature that that indicate that we can do well for up to 2 years. But beyond that, I don't know. We don't have the powerful digestion that cattle have or other animals that eat all their food raw.
Is there a fact that it's more difficult to digest raw food than cooked? I think for me it is. I've tried it.
Uh-huh. The question is it more difficult to digest raw food than cooked? And the answer is yes, in some instances. Now, there are some foods that we do quite well with raw. Bananas, apples, for some people. There are some people who do better with cooked apples than raw, especially babies. Babies should not be given raw apples before the first year of life, except in certain very unusual circumstances. Yes. Grain should be well cooked. In Korea, there's a group that they take cooked grains and roast them. Yes. So that long time, so that they are. Yes. Yes. We have. Okay. I believe in that program. I think that I have myself eaten some of those grains that have been processed in that way. They are very tasty. They are easy to digest. They are low in allergy-producing qualities. And so I think it's a good thing. But to produce the grains is quite labor-intensive. The first thing is the cooking of the grains. And they're cooked for about an hour or so. And then they're laid out in the sun and dried. And then they're put in something like a wok or a big skillet and stirred over a rather low heat until they're nicely brown. Oh, they're delicious when they're prepared that way. But it takes a long time. It takes the patience of a Korean to do that. And I don't know whether most people would be willing to put forth that much effort, but I do believe that it's a good preparation of grains. They may also do certain seeds and legumes. I believe they do, don't they? Don't they do a certain legumes in that way too? And yes, that's my belief, is that The reason that that grains and legumes prepared in that way are so good for us is that they are easily digested with that type of preparation. And then they allow the body to work on whatever disease you have that might be difficult, your difficulty. But they are delicious to eat, you're quite willing to take nothing but that and some raw fruit with your meals. And it's quite delicious in that way. Question?
Could a person who decides to do a raw diet, could they take the B3 and vitamins?
Can a person who is dieting with an all-raw diet just do a supplement of B vitamins? And would that be all right? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I know that this woman who we had here, she did not respond once she had gotten into it, whether she could have been prevented from getting into that resistance by taking a supplement. I don't know. We have not had that much experience with it. I have known people who have fasted, who have done a raw food fast for 2 years, and then eaten cooked foods or a regular diet for 2 years, and then gone back for another year or two, and done that multiple times, and they have seemed to have a good benefit. But I don't know the full case on that. All right, let's go to our next one. High protein diet. Let me tell you that I do not approve of this. The high protein diet is difficult for us to process. It has been associated with sudden deaths, a number of them. In fact, I have a report right here from the Southern Medical Association Journal on a teenage girl, 16 years old, who was on one of these diets and died suddenly. And it was reported in the Journal of the Southern Medical Association. And so I'm afraid of these diets, and I do not believe that we should use them. And while it may have a high level of satiety, and you may lose weight fast, it may increase your cholesterol and uric acid and give you a number of problems that are difficult to reverse. The liquid protein diets, for the same reason, potassium loss is another. The young girl who was 16, whose case is reported in here, did have low potassium, and it was felt that her problem was that she had a fatal heart rhythm disturbance. About the low-protein diet, that would be a high-carbohydrate diet, and I don't have any real great difficulty with that. If it's done correctly. Rice diet can be fine, provided the rice is well cooked. The Beverly Hills diet, and in fact, there was a rice diet, the Kempner rice diet, was begun back in the 40s, 1940s. And there are a few people still on this Kempner rice diet for malignant hypertension. The diet was mainly rice and some fruit, but malignant hypertension has a prognosis of 6 months. And Kempner, a man in North Carolina, I believe he may have been at Duke, Kempner, this man, thought, well, Orientals do well on rice, and if they don't eat too much salt, they don't have hypertension. And so maybe it would work for malignant hypertension. And so he started using just rice. They could have rice cakes, rice flour, rice just like it is, no salt, just rice. They would make rice into little croquettes and just all sorts of ways that they tried to make it palatable, but the people ate nothing but rice, and their malignant hypertension came right down. They did not die in 6 months. Some of them are still living today, 60, 70 years old, and still living, and still eating a lot of rice.
Is that yeah. White rice, or are we talking about
No. Rice? Yeah, that's real rice. It's not white rice. You know, there's rice and there's white rice. But the real rice is rice, is the rice, and the other is white rice. Okay. All right. What about, what's the difference between hunger and appetite? Well, everybody has had the experience, I am sure, that you have eaten a meal and you started out being very hungry. And you have eaten a meal, you've eaten well, and you're not hungry anymore. But the cook brings out from the kitchen the dessert. And you can eat some more. And enjoy it. That's your appetite. That's no longer hunger. In fact, it doesn't take much food at all to satisfy hunger. Just a little bit, and you're not hungry anymore. And the rest of the time, you keep eating because of appetite. You eat until you've had what you think is sufficient for you. But the stomach sensation, real hunger, is mainly a throat and mouth problem, and not so much stomach and intestinal problem. You feel it more pretty high up, and then when your throat and your mouth feel satisfied, you still keep on eating until your stomach tells you that's enough. But the stomach was not specially the thing that caused you to have the hunger. Now, a lot of people will have pain in the abdomen if they don't eat, but that is a withdrawal from having been eating too much. Did you get that? Some people have a headache when they don't eat. Does that mean they're hungry? No, the headache is a withdrawal from their having been eating too much. Okay, do we have some questions? Yes.
I was thinking of diabetics.
Yes.
They recommend the three meals and then two or three snacks in
between. Yes. What about for diabetics or those with hypoglycemia taking multiple meals? The answer is no, unless you take insulin that has a time that it has its greatest activity. There are certain insulins that has an activity now, and it will be a few hours later when it has another increased activity, and a few hours later an increased activity, and the doctor says eat on a certain schedule. Those individuals should do what their doctor says. But for the average diabetic, this is type 2 diabetic, two meals a day is the most favorable program for them. Okay. I'm going to, yes. Okay, good question. Do you lose something when you cook grains for a long time? Not really. Here is generally what happens. Let us say that you have your nutrient content here, up to here in grains, and you start cooking right there. You start the boiling process right there. And within 20 minutes, this is 20 minutes. Most of your losses will have occurred. and then you have very few additional losses after the first 20 minutes. That's of most of the major nutrients, like the B vitamins and so forth. But there are certain trace elements. There are some trace nutrients that are low, and they are down here. These are trace nutrients. As you begin to cook it longer and longer and longer, they begin to go up like this. So you gain some trace nutrients that you do not have with short cooking time. Let us say that this time right here is how long is it you generally cook rice? 30 minutes? So it's 30 minutes, and you haven't even started to unlock those trace nutrients that we don't get well from some other source. Okay, one last point, and that is this. Don't cross the line. Here is your diet program. Failure begins with the first decision to cross this yellow line. So, here at Yuki Fines, you will notice, if you're overweight, you will notice, I lost 6 pounds while I was at Yuki Fines. Ah, that's good. Then you go back home, and you say, oh, I'm so happy with my new diet. In 6 months, I'm going to have lost all the weight that I want to lose. And I don't have to, instead of 6 months, I'll take 2 extra months and I'll go 8 months and I'll just eat this little thing that I like so much and I'll eat this little thing that I really enjoy and I'll take a few extra months, but, it will be, I don't mind taking a few extra months to lose all the weight. It will not work that way. If you decide to eat some unhealthful foods, the wicked human heart does not know any place where it has to deny itself. So if you do not have a line that you say, I do not cross that line. I am not going to just eat one ice cream cone. It's none. Zero. It's not that I'm just going to, once a week I'm going to have buttered toast. It's finished. You're no more buttered toast. It's done. Okay. Any last question? We have about half a minute. Yes.
Can you reiterate about cholesterol and fasting? I have naturally high cholesterol.
Okay.
I have meal before, and I recently stopped taking it.
Very good. The question is, what does fasting do for high cholesterol? Beneficial. It's beneficial for high cholesterol. What is not good is for you to fast and then go back to, say, a totally vegan diet, and then all of a sudden you eat things with lots of cholesterol in it, and your equipment has no longer the capacity to handle this excessively high cholesterol diet that was unhelpful for it in the beginning. But fasting is beneficial for cholesterol.
Would fasting bring it down again?
Fasting will not immediately bring cholesterol or triglycerides down, but it will in a few days. Triglycerides may take some weeks or even months to come down properly. All right, we have now our Master of Ceremonies, Don Miller, and he will tell you what's next up.
Next up right now is lunch, of course. But I need to go ahead and give me your forms, neatly filled out in block printing with your month before the day of your birth. That'll be good. What to stress in asking questions, since we are recording these things, this whole seminar. As you ask your question, of course, it's not being picked up by the microphone. Make your questions very short. Don't go on and on with the whole case history. Just say, here's my question. You'll normally hear Dr. Agatha echoing what you're saying. It's for the tape's sake. Because many times when you're listening to the tape back home, you hear her talking away, then you hear a long pause. Then he says, that was the most wonderful point you just made. Now let's, and you wonder, what was the point? And you always miss that point. This afternoon, I'll have a box that will sit right here. It's going to say questions. And I'll have a stack of paper. On Thursday morning, Dr. Thrash gives a class on just questions and answers. And what she'll do is she'll read your question and she'll answer your question. So most of your questions should go into the box. Now, with a question right then, that's very important. If you're just trying to add to the seminar, it's really tough just to add to it from wherever you're sitting because no one's going to hear it back home. By this afternoon, Jerry and Bruno are working and we should have our translator thing all set up. So that'll be nice. So she'll understand her in the back and do what she's doing right now. But we appreciate that and have no problems with it. We're going to meet back here for class this afternoon. I'm going to say for this afternoon, let's meet at 2:45 instead of 2:30. Because if you want your blood work done, you've got to go to the Lifestyle Center at 2 o'clock to pay for it. So I'm going to give you an extra 15 minutes to be here. Normally you're not here anyway. So be back here by 2:45 and I'll drone on and on until cooking school. And then you'll go down to the cafeteria. So if you miss my class, cooking school is held in the cafeteria. Any questions? Okay. Bon appetit, guten appetit, and all those good things. We'll see you later.
You have been listening to another special American Step Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony. Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.